talking to my people, yeah. Talking to the ghetto, get down. You're out there floating on your own, hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Ghetto people, what are you gonna do? Tell me, do you really think that the government cares about you? No, they don't. Gonna turn to listen to me. I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah. Ghetto people, oh yeah.
Where you wanna be?
Where you wanna
tell
be?
Me why your life is?
Tell me, tell me.
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a ghetto rare disease. Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed will never come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to. Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that?
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't. Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to? Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah. Talking to my people.
Just don't see
what you're living
like. You're living,
living like you're living.
Caught up in the make believe,
lost in your dreams. Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self respect.
Stop it,
y'all.
Talking to my people, yeah. Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the banks thrown at you. The cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances on the short falls of greed will never come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from you. Ghetto people, yeah.
What are you gonna do?
What are you gonna do?
Do you really think that?
Do you think it all?
Who you gonna turn to next?
Tell me,
people,
you gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. Ghetto people,
where do you wanna be?
Where you wanna be?
What your life is?
What's with your life?
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Pesante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Good morning, family. I hope everything is well with you this morning. I hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, needed to do, have to do, and must do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. I know that the weather is still an issue. It's going to get better, but it's also not going to be the same as it once was in parts of the country. They're going to consistently be erratic weather patterns because climate change is real. It is real. And so for those who are in temperate climates, you might see something harsh every now and then. For those who expect, like in the Midwest and the Northeast, it's just going to be harder and harsher. That's just the reality, y'all. That's it. It is what it is, you know. And so just be prepared, you know. And the fact that Trump and people of his ilk are still climate deniers and still opening up lands for mining, opening up parts of for oil drilling, and all of these things, it's a damn shame. But it is what it is. So I'm glad that you're here with us today. I hope you stay with us for today and Wednesday and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. because we are African Perspectives. This is African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday evening. Oh, tonight, I believe that Buy Black 365 will air tonight at either it's 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock. I believe it's 8 o'clock that they will finally air. And I'm going to stay tuned for it, even though I know that here in Georgia, here in Atlanta, the championship game, the college championship game, is being played between Alabama and Georgia. And that's, of course, you know, big deal, the big football game. You know, I'm a big sports fanatic, just keeping it real. I played football, played basketball, I coached, I refereed. I mean, I did all those things. You know, it's just the NCAA, I'm sour on it. The NFL, I'm sour on it, but I still watch. You know, but anyway, getting back to our lineup. So hopefully tonight that they will air by Blacks 365. And Wednesdays, Revive with Sister POC, and that's from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern. Us Lifting Us on Thursday evenings with Baba Akima and Baba Kimbizi and Brother DJ and Sister Nana, Sister Shay, and all the other good brothers and sisters with us lifting us, the Economic Development Cooperative for our people. And we're getting very close to opening up the Cafe Ulu, the Internet Coffee and Internet Cafe, and just showing the example of what can be done when we pull our monies together to be collective. And I'm hoping that not only we do that in Atlanta, but we do that wherever you are, because of the strong response from your particular area to gain membership in Us Lifting Us and to invest in Us Lifting Us. So on Fridays, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Check them out every Friday, 8 p.m. till about 11. And outstanding programs that Brother Elliot and guests that he has. On Saturdays, Saturday morning, it's Sports Talk with Brother Troy Wilmore. And that's from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Saturday early evening, it's Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. On Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., Revive with Sister PLC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Sunday evening, 7 p.m. I listened last night, and Sister Dr. Cynthia McKinney was on talking about the issues that are affecting African people globally. And that was last night at 7 p.m. Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Time for an Awakening. So those are some of the programs, and listening to Brother Elliot, there are some other programs that are up and coming. In fact, one program coming out of the U.K. That's right. We'll have a program out of the U.K. Oh, and a special thing about Black by Black 365 is going to be a video cast. So while they're broadcasting, it will also be video broadcasting. So that's exciting, which is something I'm, you know, I was talking about, a friend of mine asked me to deal with it. I was like, you know, that sounds kind of cool. Should do that, you know. Also, too, last week's guest, Brother Bumani, you know, Tehimbe, Brother Damani Himbe, who has been taking our brothers and sisters to Africa. I mentioned I will continue to promote his program, not necessarily from a repatriation standpoint, which, of course, you know, I promote repatriation. We should all return home, but and the investment, but just as an opportunity to experience Africa, because I know for some people it really changes them. It changes their outlook and their perspective. So his tour company is Africans for the Africans. So you can go online, Africa for the Africans.org. It's not spelt with a K, it's spelt with a C. Africa for the Africans.org. Okay? Also, too, if you want to check out what he has done, you can give Brother Bumani a call at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. And he's on Facebook. You can go to facebook.com/Bumani, or you can check out youtube.com/Bumani2007, and you can check out the videos of what the brother has done and the people that he has taken, and you can see for yourself. You can put yourself in that mix. I think he's going in May. So there's plenty of time if you want to make that commitment to find out what it may take, and I think he said around about 3,500, 14 days. Not bad, 3,500. You know, get all around Accra, Kumasi, maybe even the Brohafa region, maybe even the Volta region. And you can get a chance to look at what it's looking like in and on the motherland, on the continent. Brothers and sisters, I'm constantly promoting the principles, the Kwanzaa principles, to be instilled in our everyday lives. And I'm promoting them from an African sovereignist interpretation. our good friend, Mama Marimba. She sent me the Nguza Saba from an African sovereignist perspective. So instead of the generic one that you see when you deal with Kwanzaa, you know, at the Kwanzaa season, December 26th to January 1st, this is different. This is stronger. Because when you talk about umoja, unity, the Pan-African vision of African people throughout the world joining forces to fight for African sovereignty and to build an African world order. And what I'm going to read these, and then my topic today is racism in the Arab world. Coming out of what has been happening to African people. So then you can begin to understand why this information is important and why we must embrace this and incorporate this into our daily lives, into our thinking, into our mindset. Kuju Chagaliya, self-determination. African people defining ourselves and determining our own destiny as a sovereign people. We have every right. We don't have to ask nobody for permission to determine for ourselves who we are and what we should be. And we have every right to reclaim our land. We have every right for Africans throughout the diaspora to come home and build roads, highways, schools, hospitals, towns, villages, cities, skyscrapers. We have every right. Ujima, collective working responsibility, African people working together, being responsible to and for each other, and accepting a common system of accountability. We must be accountable to each other. We must hold each other to what we say that we're going to do. Not the hell of what we say. It's what we say we're going to do. And then, damn it, do it. Ujamaa, cooperative economics or familyhood. Creating economic cooperatives based on the concept of African familyhood, interdependence, interrelationships, and community and national and global African unity. National and global African unity. Malik El-Shabazz says, Africans globally will never be respected. And it's witnessed. We will never be respected until the continent is under our control. The continent of Africa is under the control of Africans. NIA, purpose. African people sharing common goals that determine our commitments and guides our choices and decisions. This gives purpose to our lives and to our work and tells us why we were born African and why we must be proud and feel good about being African and to share that. Kumba, creativity. To think with African minds and to create from our African center. When we practice this principle, we no longer imitate non-Africans. We make our own way. We ask nobody for permission. We ask nobody for help. We do it ourselves. Imani, faith, to believe in the vision of African sovereignty and to have the passion and the will and the heart to bring it into being. The will. Marcus Garvey said, up, you mighty race, you can accomplish what you will. You can accomplish if we have the will to do it. It would be accomplished. Do we have the will? I'm going to talk today about racism. And of course, you know, I've talked about this a number of times on this program. And hoping to help our people understand what racism is and truly what it isn't. I have to help us understand that there's only one form of racism on the planet. And that is European, Caucasian, supremacy, racism, and privilege. There's only one form. That's it. Others might be prejudiced. That means to prejudge. Others might be bigoted, mean-spirited, and hateful. We can be that. In fact, sometimes we are that. But we're not racist. We have no ability to include or exclude. We don't have any ability to say to Caucasian people, you can't get this job. You can't get this promotion. You can't go to this school. You can't live in this neighborhood. We have no ability. And they have all the ability because it is theirs. They created this. So if they want to move back into a neighborhood that they gave up 30, 40 years ago because they didn't want to live near you, but now that they don't want to travel from way out where they went to come back into something, into the city or whatever for their job, they don't want to make these long commutes, then they do it. It's up to them. They do what the hell they want to do. And so they'll do it. And then, you know, they just move you out. Gentrification is an issue that's happening across this country, probably around the world. In fact, when we have our programs from England, the brother will probably talk about what's happening in other cities in the London area, in the UK. So I'm looking forward to that. Looking forward to that program. Racism. Yeah. Once again, I'm using Atlanta Black Star. I love Atlanta Black Star for outstanding narratives and video streams. Go to AtlantaBlackStar.com and check out Atlanta Black Star. Also, Two Black Agenda Report. That's another source, The Root. And anything else I can come across, if I come across something on Facebook that I feel that needs to be brought to the attention of us, then I always put it on. This is Getting Respect, How Different Groups Around the World Deal with Global Racism. Remember, European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon. It is global. But also, too, remember, there's only one form of racism. Now, because of what Europeans have done, others have done as well. And some have done it even prior to Europeans making that big move in the 1400s, 1300s, in their so-called awakening. And then, of course, they're exploiting, going around the world, taking everybody's stuff in the name of. David Love of the Atlanta Black Star staff posted this a while ago, back in 2016. How do oppressed respond to racism? How differently does each group respond depending upon the country they live in? The authors of a new book explore the answers to these questions in a thought-provoking work that has implications for studying and addressing discrimination. In Getting Respect, Responding to Stigma and Discrimination in the United States, Brazil, and Israel, the authors conducted an 8-year sociological study of 400 working and middle-class people from the 5 major groups in these 3 countries: American Africans in New York, Brazilian Africans in Rio, and Palestinian Arabs and Ethiopians and Mizrahi Jews in Israel. The interviewees include people who experienced discrimination, being deprived of resources, and those who dealt with the stigmatization, being assigned to low class status or lower status. When asked about incidents where they were treated unfairly, these individuals described interactions where they felt underestimated, misunderstood, feared, overlooked, shunned, or discriminated against, the author wrote. They classified the responses, including how they confronted their stigmatizers, aimed to avoid confirming racial stereotypes, used humor, and chose to ignore the incident, often motivated by a desire to get respect. In one case, an American African man named Joe finds himself in an elevator with several Caucasian men at work. One of the men tells a joke about monkeys and American African people, causing Joe to become understandably stressed. Yet, he does not respond or react angrily because He has only been on the job a week and does not want to get fired. One of the authors of the book, Michelle Lamont, a professor of sociology and African and American African studies at Harvard University, director of the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs, and the Robert L. Goldman Professor of European Studies. She told Atlanta Black Star that the inspiration for the research came from an earlier work in which she compared American African and Caucasian workers in New York to North African and Caucasian workers. Both American African and North African immigrants are victims of racism in their respective societies, she noted, yet have different perspectives of equality. One of the questions was, what makes people equal? In the U.S., people talk about a lot about money making people equal. If you can buy a house and I can buy a house, we're equal. Whereas in France, no one ever said that. It was more like human nature in the same cross groups or were equal citizens. So I really felt like there was so much more to be studied there, Lamont told the Atlanta Black Star. In addition to having an interest in conceptions of equality, the Harvard professor and current president of the American Sociological Association also was interested as a comparativist in examining experiences and stigmatization and discrimination. The approach in getting respect, Lamont noted, was not merely to begin with the notion that every stigmatized minority group experiences racism, but rather to get a sense of the texture of its across nations and how their experiences are explained by the context in which people live. It was important to understand the degree to which groups are in contact with each other, how much they interact, intermarry, and the like. So it was not only a question of understanding variations in experiences of racism, but how can we account for it, she said. According to the Harvard sociologist, the author's first objective was to try to understand how phenotype of Africanness is associated with different experiences in these three countries. You cannot presume that you know that being African is interpreted as the same across places, Lamont stated. So basically, what we argue in the book is that American Africans have access to scripts and stories about the history of their group, which makes them much more clear-minded when it comes to experiencing something that will attribute to racism, because it is so widely discussed in American society, this experience. I disagree. In Brazilian culture, by contrast, it is considered rude to make a race assailant, integral part of your interactions with other people. The only context under which people would feel free to say, "What are you doing? That was racist," is if the N-word was used, if something more explicit was done. So otherwise, they kind of just ignore it. Believe me, I've been there. I'll be commenting deeply on this stuff. Ethiopian Israelis, on the other hand, as Jewish immigrants want to assimilate into Israeli society, researchers said. And while they face blatant racism and do respond to that discrimination, their response is less confrontational and motivated by what Lamont describes as a desire to move up into the society. While the book explores the fascinating topic of international racism and how different groups are stigmatized based on their Africanness, there are other groups discussed in the book that face racism, not based on physical appearance or color, but on other life circumstances that are shaped by politics. Arab Israelis, Israeli citizens of Arab descent as opposed to Palestinians in the occupied territories, for instance, are not stigmatized on the basis of their phenotype because they're physically distinguishable from others, Lamont noted. But people can quickly recognize when they talk, their accents, or they carry their body a little bit differently, and they are rejected because they are perceived as allies with Palestinians who are viewed as terrorists. You cannot just You cannot just understand their experience. You have to understand their place in the national politic to make sense of what they and how they live. Then there are the Mizrahim, Israelis who are Jewish and Arab and of Arab descent, coming from countries such as Yemen and Iraq. The case for the Mizrahim is a little different because they're also Jewish and they feel that they're fully part of the country because it's a Zionist country that says everyone who is Jewish is welcome and belongs, Lamont stated. But at the same time, the Ashkenazi Jews, the European Jews who created the state of Israel, tend to look down on the Mizrahim because their family comes from the Middle East and they are perceived as being backward. Lamont added that although they are concentrated at the bottom of Israeli socioeconomic structure and face exclusion like Brazilian Africans and African Americans, the Mizrahim prize themselves on their social integration and tend to be less confrontational. They speak of racism not as something that they experience, but as something in the past or something that happens to other people. How naive. How naive. Even as such of the five groups covered in the book, it has its own experience with oppression and legacy of resistance. There has been cross-pollination and influence among them. For example, in the 1970s, the Mizrahim formed their own Black Panthers, a protest movement modeled after the American African Social Justice Organization. And in recent years, Palestinian activists showed solidarity with American African protesters in Ferguson and giving them advice via social media on how to deal with police tear gas. This has Ethiopian Israelis protest against police violence in the streets of Tel Aviv and proclaim that Black Lives Matter. Lamont said that the transnational transfer of ideas and models on how to deal with racism were important to her study. There are a lot of cultural exchanges between the three countries, the civil rights movement in the U.S. and the Black Lives Matter movement. The mass mobilization that we see in the U.S. has a lot of implications abroad. So, for instance, in the context of Brazil, there's been a lot of reactions to the Black Lives Matter movement because there's massive police violence in Brazil. But there's very little mobilization against it, Lamont added. So when they saw this mass mobilization in the U.S., a lot of the people there started saying, why do we experience much more than them? Yet no one mobilizes. So there's a kind of transnational exchange and learning lessons from across places. Lamont said that while some of the exchanges take place through the media, there's also the example of Durban Conference, the Durban South African Conference, that was held right around the same time as the 9/11 incident in that same time frame in 2001. Which led to Brazil creating anti-discrimination agencies and an anti-discrimination industry that had not existed. So it has to be the case that countries learn from others. And also, I gather that Black Lives Matter took on the Palestinian cause and said, this is racism as well. Lamont says there are a few lessons that readers should learn from Getting Respect and its subject matter on racism. The first is that while much of the literature on racism in the U.S. centers around American Africans, which is not as prominent in a focus on the universal experience of stigmatization, the book examines the American African experience through the lenses of other national contexts, which Lamont believes is useful. And while some readers may know absolutely nothing about Israel or Brazil, the real life stories of the feelings of the people in the research sound familiar. Further, the book is written with Caucasian people in mind, those who do not understand what American African people face on a daily basis and a lack of proper context to appreciate the impact of European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. Educating the ignorant emerged as an important theme throughout the research for this book. People get extremely worked up because with racism comes a sense that people's dignity is really being challenged. The victims of racism feel like they're not fully recognized for their work, and the people who feel like they're being denounced for being racist feel like they are being given lessons in a way that is unfair because they don't think of themselves as racist, even if they are, and they are. Given extremely high levels of racial segregation in the U.S., many Caucasian people have no idea about the lives of American African people. So the book is also written to bring this to light for them, to really show, well, yes, it's understandable that people are really pissed off, she said. That's the kind of thing that they have to deal with on a daily basis. And that is true. That's what we have to deal with on a daily basis. And the fact of the matter is that our lack of understanding still to this very day about what racism is and what it isn't causes us to believe that somehow, some way, that we can change those who perpetrate this for our inclusion. And just as the article said, getting respect. Getting respect. No one will respect you if you do not respect yourself. Respect is something that is earned. And so in order for anybody to respect us as African people, we first must respect ourselves. We first must purge ourselves of all the ignorance and all of the doubt, all of the things that have held us back. We must get rid of it. But it's very hard. It's very hard because you're bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of your inferiority, of your inability to overcome and do anything. And so, given that unfortunate, harsh reality, we as African people blame ourselves for this condition. Many of us continue to do it. I know some good friends of mine, and I argue with them all the time. I say, hey, and well, you know, their thing, they're, you keep blaming the white man. You keep blaming the white man. Yeah. I put the blame where it squarely belongs. I put the blame at the root of the problem. You can't solve this problem until you deal with the root of the problem. And the root of the problem is European, Caucasian, supremacy, racism, and privilege that they have established for themselves at the expense of everybody else. That's the root of the problem. And so even though you might have some Caucasian who can articulate it, just like this Caucasian lady, a professor at Harvard University, professor of African, and I thought that was Skip Gates. But she's not going to talk about how to dismantle or eradicate European, Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege. None of them. They could, I mean, there are some Caucasians that make good money. Jane Elliott, Tim Wise. They articulate the problem. They're on a national level and going to here and there and speaking and so forth. Big honorariums. And we hear and we clap. And we admire somebody who has an understanding of the situation. But yet and still, it persists. Our situation continues. And as far as I'm concerned, it worsens. When you look at coming out of enslavement, when we realized that we had to do for ourselves, when we came together and had a more sense of family, a more sense of community, and we built communities, Rosewood, Tulsa, Elaine, Arkansas, Allentown in California, in the L.A. County area, Boley, Oklahoma. Because why? We were segregated. The law of the land, Plessy versus Ferguson, separate but equal. And then when we did that, then there was Caucasian backlash. Any excuse to vamp on our community and destroy it. The last such community that was where there were stores and shops and theater and restaurants and you name it, the Raleigh-Durham, the Haiti community. The Haiti community in North Carolina, Raleigh-Durham. That community was destroyed. They ran the interstate through there, the Model Cities program. So you see, you know, and now today, there is not one self-contained community. Not one. There's not one self-contained community in this country where you can honestly say that American Africans control this community. They got the stores, they have banks, they have a supermarkets. The only thing we have in our community, barbershops, beauty salons, and I would say that's pretty certain, because I was going to say funeral homes, but the reality is some funeral homes have a black face but are owned by Caucasians. But let's just say, for the sake of what we're talking about here, that yes, the funeral home, the barbershops, the beauty salon, the funeral home, and churches. At a time, we had self-contained communities of banks, theaters, hotels. When the Negro League was in full effect, because how we were treated by Major League Baseball at the time, excluded. And if you wanted to go to a game, you couldn't sit where you wanted to sit. There was a section for you, like everything else. But in the Negro League, it created an industry. Those brothers had to stay at American African hotels, and they were there. They had to eat at American African restaurants. But because when you are bombarded 24/7, 365 with images and notions of your inferiority and their supremacy, then you believe what they have, you should have too, or you want. And so what do you do? That's right. You go ahead and you try your best to get what they have. You try your best to get what they have. In fact, what you feel that you have is inferior because you've been trained to believe that who you are is inferior. And then what do? You want what they have. you want what they have. And not only do you want what they have, you want to be like them. You want to look like them. What a world. What a world. So the reality of the racism that we face on a daily basis that shapes our attitudes, our conduct, and our perceptions of ourselves has caused such conflict and has caused us to believe that we cannot overcome, that we're destined and doomed. Although what I do say may sound pessimistic, but let me say this, brothers and sisters, I'm very optimistic. I'm not optimistic in the sense that we're going to overcome, we shall overcome. No, I'm not in that sense that we're going to live in a world where we will be treated with dignity and respect by those who put us in this condition. No, I have no illusions about that. That ain't happening. What I'm optimistic about is African people coming into the reality of who we are and what has happened to us and now beginning to forge a new destiny for ourselves. That's what I'm optimistic about. No, I have no illusions. You want to join this conversation, brothers and sisters? Please give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Let me say it this way, because I'm involved in the conscious community and believe in African people getting ourselves together and controlling our destiny and believe in independence. I believe in self-determination. I believe in liberation. I believe in sovereignty for African people. And I know there are some of us who do, but they're not as strong because in their heart and mind, they still believe and hope that somehow that the Europeans will treat us with dignity and respect and allow us to be who we are and to live in their situation. That there's going to be some kumbaya moment, some Feliz Navidad, or whatever. And yet, all of the information says otherwise, but yet we don't want to see that. We don't want to see that reality. Yes, what I'm proposing is going to be very difficult. There's no doubt about it. Because it's going to rely on us doing for ourselves. We can't go somewhere else. It's going to rely on us thinking, planning, implementing, looking at it again and again, finding the best ways. It can and must be done. Will it? I believe that it will. Like I said, I'm optimistic. Of course, I may not see it. I would love to see the movement towards that before I depart. I would love to see that finally we're saying, you know, that... Man, how do you get this? Man, the this junk on. Sometimes when you pull something up on the computer, man, just stuff just jumps out at you. Well, hey, I understand how websites and other places gain money. You got to advertise, you know. Where, especially where they, you know, when you go on there, they're not asking you to buy any money. I mean, excuse me, not asking you to pay any money. They're asking you to look at these products and possibly buy them, just like commercial television. You know, it's just something you just have to do. And of course, here in America, this is the land of commercialism. This is the European society, capitalism. You know, and the fact that they created this, and it's, to me, it is far out. It's just way out there, especially as far as we're concerned. And, you know, I've mentioned this on the program many times before. It would take over 230 years to have economic equality in this country. In this country, over 230 years. What it's saying is that Caucasians' economic level would be frozen, and ours would be at a steady, whatever that pace might be to get to 230, ever how much we're supposed to get, but theirs would be frozen. And of course, in capitalism, you know, that ain't happening, because in capitalism, it's always about more, more, and more. I remember many, many years ago when I realized, they said this company lost money because it didn't make as much money as it did the previous year. They didn't lose money. They didn't make as much money, but they didn't lose. They still made profit. But then you realize, in a capitalist society, that arrow has to be on a constant incline. And they don't want no dips, dipping back and forth and back. No, they want a constant ascension. So if you made $10 million this year and you made $9 million the next year, they've taken it like you lost $1 million. No, but you still made profit of $9 million. But that's the kind of system that we have. And therefore, in that kind of system that we don't control, and the fact that the money, even in itself, is illusional. Because the money itself is just stated. It's not backed up by anything but the government's word and international bankers' word. And of course, what backs them up is the countries that participate that have the ability to kill you. That's what backs them up. So, understand what the bottom line is, dear brothers and sisters. We're going to take a break. When we come back from that break, we'll continue with this discussion. I hope you will be able to join us. You can just dial the number, 215-490-9832, 215-490-9832. We'll be right back. Brothers and sisters, you are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay right here with us.
Peace. My name is Professor X the Overseer, and what you're about to witness is the messenger group X-Clan. Here's the nine. The movement Black Watch. And when we're not outraged about the oppression upon the black existence, we step to you in blackness. By the way,
exist in a state of vainglorious as we are protected by the red, the black, and the green. Heed the words of the brother, Sissy.
Yeah. Letters to words, word to phrase, to paragraph. Heed math as Jay begins class. Science of past is now brought to the rhyme fix. From the scrolls, straight to the verses. God to God, from God to man. Many kings, many leaders, a fist from a hand. They call me militant, now what does this mean? Do I carry a gun to leave the army scene? Put the cause and never pause, as simply as the brother. Raise the flag, wave the colors. Red, black, green with the key, the difference. Words make a way in the world in an instant. Living to die and I die to live again. 36 degrees, comprehend. A man getting stronger till he's man no longer. Unearthly state makes the time seem shorter. The ever radiant awareness, voice forth the one. Open eye, stroke sun. Practicing priests, standing by what I teach. So you all stand starving as I start to unleash. Words of love. Brought from the Genesis, will exist till Armageddon is a witness. The originals built the earth. One must be aggression to learn a basic lesson. Quite majestic, stern within reality. A juggernaut when you tamper with mentality. However, crown, extension and dimension of a brain cell. Bringing hell to the sellouts. The ever tangled web we weave. Always trying to obtain, no attempt to achieve. Descendants of kings and queens act like justice. Never potential, caught up in the measure. Jealousy of what are we? Becomes tendency for their thievery. Alright, cool. But no need to pull the trigger, cause that's a fool. I get my words like that in my stool. To produce the words that they fool about. It's another way of taking out these sissies. Who may try to extinct my principality. But of course not having madness. From beginning, I'm the end. Observe me. Ignorance is not a trend. So as I beckon, for a few seconds, pull the reins and leave the words on the brother. Mastering words on the verse. Funk is a force I exert. Egyptian, African, now I'm on a black watch. Check my sundial, synchronize a clock. I can catch a shadow as the moon reflects the sun. Creator's eyes make a path of brother one. So now I walk softly and carry a big stick, a bird stick, so you natives wanna lick. Jay brings the funk and spreads jam to the wheat bread. And the funk of this one vanglorious, unearthly resistance, strong with persistence. Grand verbal allocations, tribal connection, pyramids, witness the funk bearer. Vibe sharer, not the error. Brother is balanced like the scales of Thor. And even my demand makes stone seem soft. Corrupts all systems, positive poison of me. Some call it onk, it's a key. Black is a color while blackness, state of a mind state. But how many of you fake? Today, Brother Jay can find a better way, so be it. Plant it down and make it stay, I serve a purpose. Yet I'm not the G.I. Joe, I am the brother. Yo, I can never swear a place, so just hear me a step to the mic and stage area. As I drop the science that breaks the clock barrier. Words of old make me more than a beginner. The key opens knowledge and places an antenna. Americana man, Africana brother. Don't forget the land, cause the birth is from the mother. A vibe is in place, obtained and discovered. Tune in your audio and hear the words of brother.
Yo, Aristotle, Plato, Socrates, step off.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You just listened to X-Clan, Heed the Word of the Brother. You know, I'm going to be playing some good stuff on these breaks, some stuff you probably haven't heard in a while, especially instrumentals. I love instrumentals. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com, where you can hear some of the previous recorded programs. My good brother, Brother Kwaku, formerly Brother Jeff, Brother Kwaku, more than likely will change his name. He's going to have an African name. He wants to do it, and I don't blame him. I mean, I did it myself, you know. I mean, if you believe in self-determination, if you believe in African sovereignty, you know, that's not to say that, you know, changing your name is. I think that when you have a level of consciousness, a name change is a move you will make automatically. And there are some brothers and sisters who are deeply conscious who still have their birth names, if you want to use that term, or given names, or European names, you know. And that's cool, too, because it's not, you know, because, I mean, there's some cats that, given beautiful names, that have done some heinous things. So it ain't about the name. I've never advocated a name change for our people. What I've always advocated, what I'm promoting at this very moment, is a mind change. change. Because once your mind is right, everything else will fall into place. You ain't got to worry about it because your mind is right. You know. So give us a call right here at African Perspectives. 215-490-9832. Also, too, just another reminder of the programs that we have here. On Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening Radio. That's this program every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. If you can't listen live, then you can go to Black Talk Radio Network and check out the archives. Tonight, I believe they're going to premiere tonight. And like I said, I think one thing that they were having a problem with last week, from my understanding, was because they want to do a video cast and simultaneously with the broadcast here on Time for an Awakening. And I'm quite sure Brother Elliot is happy about that. And so hopefully that happens tonight, that we have Black Talk, excuse me, By Black 365 tonight. Wednesday night, Revive with Sister POC. And that's from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. All these are Eastern times that I'm going to give you. On Thursday, Us Lifting Us, 9 p.m. to 11. On Friday, if it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, you know, that's time for an awakening. And then Brother Elliot and Brother Richard will waken you, believe me, with good studio guests and good commentary and so forth. On Saturday, Troy Wilmore, Sports Talk. Saturday, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers, 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. And on Sunday, Revive with Sister POC, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And Time for an Awakening in Sunday evening, 7 p.m. to 9. Good program last night. I listened. Like I said, definitely want to always promote all the other things that are going on here on Time for an Awakening. I keep mentioning the Motherland Media Network because the other programs, Us Lifting Us and Black Reality Think Tank, we were on that network and now we moved here. So we'll continue to talk about that. And also, too, talk about how we got here, you know, with Sister Queen Ifama. She will always be remembered. In fact, next month, the 21st. Excuse me, no, the 27th, February 27th, she made her transition, February 27th. So, unfortunately, I don't have anything from Queen Ifama that maybe I'll check with Brother Kwaku, might be able to find something in the archives and put it on Zara Radio and play something that Queen Ifama. I know what I could do. Contact Brother LaRue and I can play, because Queen Ifama did a piece on YouTube. So I'm gonna find out something. I gotta find a way to keep that sister because I miss her dearly. I truly do. Five of the biggest threats facing African people today. Once again, this is from Atlanta Black Star, and this is from November of 2013. So this is a ways away, but everything. You could bring something up from 1920 and it's still germane or relevant today. Because there was what's a one cliche, the more things change, the more they stay the same. See, only up until the time, dear brothers and sisters, that we seriously make the break from the yoke and the oppression of Europeans, of Caucasians, will we finally realize the true feeling of freedom. The true feeling of independence, the true feeling of self-determination, the true feeling of liberation, and the ultimate feeling of sovereignty. We will get there. I may not get there with you, but I know. I want to let you know today that we as African people will come into the realization and the physical realization of sovereignty for African people. firmly believe it, even though it doesn't look very good at this moment. I know it doesn't, but believe me. Modern Arab enslavement of African people. Africa has been devastated economically, socially, politically, and geographically from combined 13 centuries, 1,300 years of chattel slavery at the hands of Europeans and Arabs that involved the removal of 35 million people from their native land, according to some estimates. Although enslavement has been legally abolished, African people are still subjugated to chattel slavery in 2018. Anti-Slavery International reports that over 50,000 Africans have been sold and owned by Arabs in North Africa, and an estimated 660,000 people are subject to forced labor in sub-Saharan Africa. In the Northwest African country of Mauritania, a system now exists by which Arab Muslims called Bidens, they call them the masters, who disdain physical work, still hold the Haratin enslaved Africans as property. An estimated 90,000 Mauritanians remain essentially enslaved. The Haratin mothers do not own their children. The so-called enslaved Africans, the Haratins, do not own their children. They are instead passed down through their so-called master's estate. Captives are bought and sold, given as wedding gifts, and traded for camels, trucks, or guns. The enslaved Africans perform domestic work, haul water, and shepherd cattle. Sudan has seen a resurgence of enslavement since 1983. During the Second Sudanese Civil War, as many as 200,000 people have been taken into enslavement. The indigenous ethnic groups of the South Sudan are often attacked by northern African Arabs who kill men and imprison children and women and taking women as slaves. Physical maiming is not uncommon and is usually done to the captives to instill fear and to prevent escape. According to a CBS News report, enslavement or captivity captives have been sold for $50 per person. Many of the perpetrators of these atrocities are of mixed race and Arabized Africans who have completely rejected their African identities and murder and enslave the interests of Arabs. Slavery also occurs in a number of other African countries, including Somalia, Mali, Niger, and Chad. In the name of Arabs, and I know I saw a piece the other day. I'm going to get to the other four in a minute. On Islam. And it's, you know, it said that Islam, the religion of Islam, could be the best thing. I mean, to me, any theology that liberates you, makes you whole, makes you feel like a human being, to me, whatever that is a good thing. But to say Christianity, Islam, Judaism, and all these other religions, when you know the history and what they have done, how they have subjugated people, I don't know. Because if there's a religion that says that your religion is the best, and you should subjugate all those who do not believe the way you believe, subjugate any infidels, just like the Pope granting permission or giving permission to the Spanish and the Portuguese to subjugate the world because they believe that Christianity, and of course, they didn't do it to save anybody's soul. They're not saving no damn body soul. They did it to bring them under subjugation and to control and to rule them and to make them believe that what you brought to them was the best thing for them. Neocolonialism in Africa by the U.S., European countries, Arab nations, and China. America, China, Arab, and European powers have embarked on a new scramble for Africa, targeting it, its natural resources. The Chinese are traveling to Africa in large numbers, with over 1 million Chinese citizens on the continent already and more arriving daily. Angola alone has a Chinese population of over 350,000. And I'm going to tell you, I wish I had the ability to, at this moment with the resources, to do fact-finding, to go to Africa and look at and present to African people globally what the situation is and what we need to do globally as African people. Like I said, the most revolutionary thing that we can do at this very moment is declare our Africanness, that we are an African people. It is the only thing that will save African people is African solidarity, African sovereignty, Africans coming into the realization of who we are as a people and eliminating outside interference, outside sources. China's direct investment in Africa today exceeds $50 billion, but most of the profits are returned to China and do not largely benefit the people of African nations. The presence of the United States is also expanding. The Pentagon's AFRICOM suggests that there is one military base on the continent, but according to sources, U.S. military is at work throughout Africa in base construction, security, cooperation engagements, training exercises, advisory deployments, special operations missions, and a growing logistics network, all undeniably evidence of expansion to secure its interests in Africa. Arab expansions in the Sudan are currently killing native Africans in Darfur and Nubia to grab land and resources and make way for Arabs outside of the continent to resettle there. Over the past 50 to 60 years, Arabs have killed or enslaved Africans, millions of Africans, seizing land from them and displacing them in their efforts. Tribalism and lack of solidarity. There's a book that's, I can't remember the brother's name, but he named three things: tribalism, mysticism, and something else, which prevents Africans from coming together. And I definitely agree. Mysticism, tribalism. The negative effects of tribalism permeate African people in the Americas, permeate people in the Americas, Caribbean, and within African nations. In Africa alone, there are over 3,000 distinct tribes, and resulting conflicts have caused millions of deaths, trauma, and displacement. In 1994, an estimated 1 million Rwandans were killed in a battle between Tutsis and Hutus. In the Americas and in parts of the Caribbean, tribalism also plays out in the form of African violence towards each other, gang violence. The major issue stemming from tribalism amongst African people is that it causes a lack of solidarity. Europeans and Asians have all but eradicated thousands of years of tribalism and have been able to unify and achieve major advancements. They understand the importance of binding together for success. American African people and African people, period, have been unable to accomplish this unity, and so the African world today is often diverse, leading to mediocre governments, poor military defense, weak economies, and other issues. African tribalism is also part of the reason why Europeans and Asians have been able to take advantage of American Africans politically, economically, and physically. For example, the colonial Belgium government began actively promoting tensions between the Hutus and Tutsis after the First World War when it took over Rwanda. Divide and conquer. The boundaries you see, some of those boundaries were the intent to cause divisions and ill feeling. It was intended. Falsification of African consciousness. In his book, Falsification of African Consciousness, Dr. Amos Wilson offers an analysis of the current state of African people collective consciousness and how it prevents them from developing solutions to their collective problems. Dr. Amos Wilson defined consciousness in terms of three elements: contents, beliefs, opinions, knowledge, perceived knowledge, self-perceptions, worldview, conditioned responses. Number two, instrumentalities, how we process the contents in our minds. Number three, directional organization, how we use our consciousness to pursue goals, the values we hold, and the reasons behind our thoughts. Via his analysis, Dr. Amos Wilson concludes that European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege has altered the consciousness of African people by giving us a falsification and a fabricated contents, a false history, false knowledge, and false fantasies. Therefore, our ability to think and act in our own interest has been impaired because we have been confused about what knowledge is, who it belongs to, and how it should be used. Today, because the propaganda intended to influence our thinking, many African people perceive racism only in terms of prejudice and discrimination, and therefore we focus on the consumption of goods we think will get other people to like us and respect us, while neglecting the acquisition of real power to dominate and control our own affairs. I'm going to read that again. Therefore, we focus on the consumption of goods, materialism, capitalism. We think that we will get other people to like us and respect us while neglecting the acquisition of real power to dominate and control our own affairs. Real power. What is power? I love Dr. Wade Noble's definition. I think it's the most definitive. Power is not money. Power is not politics and voting. I remember people talking about empower the people. We're going to, this is a power conference, and we're going to empower the people. No. Power is not education and information. Power is not money, because if the money had power, why don't you put your face on it? And of course, in this economy, which is controlled by Europeans, there may come a time very, very soon, mind you, that paper money will not be used, because they have the power to determine that, because it's theirs. That's why they killed Muammar Gaddafi, because he was going to create a currency based on, backed up by mineral wealth, particularly gold. In order to buy his crude oil out of Libya, you would have to buy it in the gold dinar. And the international bankers and the Western world and capitalism said, oh, hell no. He has to go. So no power in money. Power in politics, please. We have more people in elected office today than we ever had. And yet our condition is worse. And it seems to me that the people in public office, all they want to do is get in there and stay there. They don't really advocate on behalf of our people. They don't try to make sure they bring the resources and deal with issues of gentrification and education and jobs. It's worse. No power. Education and information. If the education information is flawed and inaccurate, and of course you know that it is, how can you derive power from that? If I'm giving you the information that continually tells you that you're less than. No power from that. So no, brothers and sisters, what power is the ability to define reality. But then to have someone else except your definition as if it's their own. That is imposing your power on others. See, I like the first part of that, the ability to define reality, because that's what we need to do. We must define reality and shape it and fashion it in our image and in our interest. But I don't want to impose it on anybody. But that's what Europeans did. They defined the reality and they imposed it on others. And they said that this is, and see, and the question that we as African people need to ask ourselves is, who are we? Who are we in Caucasian's reality? Well, first, we were the soulless people, no culture to speak of. We were the soulless people. In fact, that was the justification for our enslavement. Caucasians believed that by enslaving us, exposing us to Western ideas and Western concepts was good for us. Yeah. Exposing us to Western ideas. We should be so thankful. And really, when they did this, the majority of the Caucasians in Europe believed that what was being done was for the good of humanity. We were civilizing, we were bringing them the Christian religion and European concepts and so forth, all the while we were taking our resources and making Europe rich. Europe is rich today because of what we have done, because of the theft of Africa's resources and the killing and maiming of African people. Power is the ability to define reality. Who are we in Caucasian's reality today? Who are we today? How are we depicted? What is our image? With thugs, drug addicts, drug dealers, no fit fathers, no fit mothers. That's who we are in Caucasian's reality. And that's who we're going to be if we do not change how we look at ourselves. I don't give a damn about Caucasians and how they think and how they feel. I care about us and how we look at ourselves and each other. Five of the biggest threats facing African people today, and this is the fifth one, underdevelopment and lack of security. 2,500 years of invasion, conquest, enslavement, colonization have led to the severe underdevelopment of African continent. Many economists argue that the physical infrastructure of Africa, Latin America, and Caribbean nations are insufficient to maintain favorable economic development. And you've seen that, particularly now since the hurricanes, Maria and all the other names of hurricanes, and that are going to be even stronger. Physical infrastructure refers mainly to public transportation, roads, highways, ports, railroads, airports, etc., telecommunications, portable water, and electric energy systems, sanitation, schools, hospitals, all of these things. These are the things that I say that we must do, that we must go to Africa and tell brothers and sisters, here we come to work. Here we come to share. Here we come to share knowledge and information, educating ourselves, educating each other, working. We're not coming like we did in Liberia with an attitude that because we were born in America, somehow we're better. No, we're coming with the attitude that we're going to come to work and to build Africa for African people regardless. Develop a language that all of us can communicate in. Develop a culture. Now, if you have some traditions, you keep those traditions. But what should always be paramount is what is best for African people. You got a religion, whatever that religion is? No. What is paramount for the survival of African people? And I don't mean proselytizing either, because you got Islam or Christianity, which two of the main proselytizing religions. Bump that. Because that would be a problem, wouldn't it? Just like Malik Shabazz said, if I come to the meeting
And I have, because Islam is my religious philosophy, is my religious tradition. And it's going to be a problem. Because if you come to the meeting with Christianity and you're talking about, it's going to be a problem. Put it in your back pocket. The main thing is, how can we make this happen? It's just like on this program. I really don't want to debate, particularly with us. I don't want to debate, period. Particularly about being independent, about being self-determining, about being liberated, about being sovereign. That shouldn't be no debate amongst us whether that should happen or not. That's crazy. That's ludicrous. What should be the discussion is, how can we achieve it? Now, there may be some differences on how that can be done, but still the bottom line is, that's where we know we must go. Adequate infrastructure is the foundation for economic development and elimination of poverty. Its absence places limitations on regions' international competitiveness, trade opportunities, and foreign investment. The African continent, the second largest on Earth, is more immense than the United States, China, India, and Europe combined. Enormous distances combined with poor infrastructure hampers the intercommunications and the development ties between African nations, which also consist of diverse ethnic groups. Unity in Africa is challenging under these circumstances. This is unlike Europe, which is only one-third the size of Africa, and whose populations have been unified by Christianity for almost 2,000 years. Economic, social, and political development in Africa and the diaspora is essential for African unity, which is absolutely necessary if we are to effectively address major world forces that threaten the African world. It was a neglect of collective security that made it possible for other groups to divide, conquer, enslave, colonize African people repeatedly over the last 2,000 years. Building an African world collective security system is therefore a vital importance for our dignity, self-respect, and more importantly, for our survival. Either we unify or we die. I'm telling you right now, that should be the damn t-shirt that all of us should be wearing. Unify or die. It ain't happening with us, y'all. It ain't happening. Either we do this or we perish. That's the bottom line. That is the bottom line. Either we come together, kick to the curb all these petty differences, put religion in its proper context and place, and solely work on what is best for Africa and Africans. What is best for the land? What is best for the people on the land? What is best for the wildlife? Land management. What is best for Africa and Africans is what we need to be discussing. Everything else is just jaw-jagging. It's insignificant. That's what needs to be discussed. I know for the 50 million Africans, American Africans who are in this country, I venture to say 90% of us who are here could give less than a rat's about Africa. There are some of us who are claiming that because of the amount of time and distance that has happened, that we're not Africans. We're something new. We're black. We're black. That's something different. We're black. And being black, you want what America has. You may not want to even live with Caucasians, because there's some of us, you know, who love being black. They love being cool. They love the cars. They love the all the other material trappings of America. They're black. Then, of course, there's some of us who believe that we're not African. See, the ones who are black, they say that we were African when we came over here, when we were brought here. But through those hundreds of years and through all of the rape and through all of the misogyny, all the things that now that those things have happened, we're not African. We're something different. This is something that Caucasians created. Black Americans. That's how some of them put it. And that we have no allegiance to one another. We're individuals. See, black Americans think individually. So therefore, they can invest in private prisons. And they don't give a damn if our people are massively incarcerated. Because, in fact, they want them to be. Because that's more money for them. They're black. They're black Americans, American blacks. They want to drive the nice cars. They want to live. Now, I mean, they're perfectly cool with living in a subdivision, cul-de-sac, gated community. That's all us. All black Americans. That's cool. Manicured lawns, immaculate homes, beautiful interiors. Because we black. And I got mine. And what it is about them is they don't want to own nothing. They just want to have how they get the income, either through a job or a business or so forth, and sometimes I'm thinking here, because you know I've often said this, that here in Atlanta this is the biggest disparity of those of us who have and those of us who have not. It's the biggest, the widest, and here those of us who have no consciousness, have no allegiance. There is nothing unifying about the brothers and sisters who have to do something that would create opportunities for us. To me, if I was in that position and I had that kind of resources, I would say, hey, Law, let's pull our money together and provide some supermarkets for our people. This is what Us Lifting Us is about. This is how Us Lifting Us came into being, to try our best to try to control the economics in our community. Imagine if brothers and sisters who had that kind of wherewithal began to think in that way and would be willing to pull their monies to trust one another to begin to build with one another and say, we're going to compete for our dollars with the major supermarkets here in the Atlanta area, which is Kroger, Publix, Ingles. In fact, there's one supermarket called Wakefield's. And I thought they were us. I called them up. And I said, is this American African owned or is it Black owned? The sister said, no. Oh, that's like, wow, okay. We don't have one. In a metropolitan area, I believe it's, 4 million people? I'm not sure. I'm going to get that number. I thought, because I heard it was 6 million people in the metropolitan area of Atlanta. The city of Atlanta, there's not even 500,000. Not even 500,000. But in the, because Atlanta is in five different counties, you know, the city is in five different counties. The majority of Atlanta is in Fulton County. The next county is DeKalb, Cobb, Gwinnett, Clayton. But anyway, and we're in all. Ain't like Milwaukee. In Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee is only in Milwaukee County, but contained, of course, in Milwaukee County is the suburbs, Brookfield, West Dallas, da-da-da-da, you know. So outside of Milwaukee, in different counties, Washington County, Ozaukee County, and so there are none of us. But here in this area, we everywhere. Not only we everywhere in these counties, but everywhere throughout the state. Valdosta.
This call is being recorded.
Augusta, all these other places, we're everywhere. We got a call. Good morning. 646.
Hey, what's going on, Brother Oshie?
Hey, Jay.
I was listening to what you were saying about Black people owning a supermarket. Black people don't want that type of responsibility in Atlanta. I mean, if they really did, it should have already been done by now. I mean, you live in Atlanta now, right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, let me ask you this. How many black communities are there in Atlanta that's self-sustained?
None.
That white folks?
None.
Now, what do that tell you? And that's supposed to be the Mecca of Black America. See, Brother Oshie, this is our problem. We as a people have to get back to wanting to have Black communities and get away from the shurugal. Everything, it seems, that Black folks are being geared towards from the time of birth, integrating into whiteness. Now, we as those that are Afrocentric, for some reason, are not putting forward the true agenda of us building communities. It's going to have to come to a point to where as we're going to have to set the agenda in regards to building that together as a whole and building a community. Because it's not going to happen if we don't. Because these devils identify kids based on their parents. And they basically raise them into being, you know, offset Yorugas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we in the conscious community or the, you know, that nonsense hotel community, but I call it the African community,
Ashe,
are not coming together and doing the necessary things to put forward our agenda and how we're going to survive. Because there's no way in hell, 2018, with all we've been through since we came to these shores, that we don't have a Black community. You understand what I'm saying?
Well,
so
and we
it's
did.
Just, It's ridiculous.
And we did, Jay, and as you know, look right. at the history, we did. And, of course, Caucasians and their evil-spiritedness and jealousy and envy vamped on those communities, destroyed them, you know. And until today, there's a fear, I guess, innately in us that we can't do it or don't want to do it or fear that it may happen again. I don't know, but it's ridiculous that we don't control anything that happens in our community.
Everything that we're doing as a people and our, for some reason, self-worth is based upon the Yoruba. It's like we want everything that he has. We don't want to be separated from him and basically claim our own identity as a people. We just want to be able to have his so-called wealth, to have his women, to have all of those things that, in all honesty, is unnatural to African people. That hasn't done anything at all for our development as a people. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous when you look at it and you be honest about it. Unfortunately, we're not honest about it.
That's where, and we're not, and we don't have leadership.
Right.
Or a group of leadership is honest about it. We're in a consistently begging mode. Please,
right.
please hire us. Please promote us. Please right. let us live in your neighborhood. Please let us go to your schools. Please, 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 please. You know, and what
and
comes...
And white folks don't want you.
No.
White folks are using their usefulness for you.
No.
They really, in all truthfulness, have no use for black people
anymore
in
no.
this country all anymore,
the,
really.
No, all the cotton has been picked, you know?
Right.
All the tobacco, all that stuff. In fact, that's what mass incarceration is all about. They have no
right.
use for us. In fact, not only is mass incarceration, but if you look at the population of us in this country specifically, it's on a decline. I understand why Caucasians are on a decline, why they're experiencing negative population growth. I have no damn idea. Yes, I do. I do know why we're experiencing negative population growth. Mass incarceration, homosexuality, wanting to birth with the Yorugupians, substance abuse, all kinds of substance abuse, whether it is drugs, alcohol, and so forth. And there's some of us who just plain ain't about nothing. You know, because they have been destroyed by the system. So, therefore, that's why our numbers are declining. We used to be about 17% of this nation's population. Supposedly, we're down to damn near 12. You know, and of course, the biggest so-called minority after Caucasians, which, of course, is believed that they will be a minority by the year 2040, if the demographers who said that this is, in fact, if you remember, they said by the year 2050, there would be that, but because of the influx, particularly of Latinos through all kinds of immigration and so forth, they will be the majority people in this country.
And the thing that we don't even want to address or we don't want to even deal with is the Latino is the enemy.
Yes.
If the truth be told,
no.
He's an enemy. He has no allegiance
no.
to his Africanness or anything.
No.
He'll do a number on us if given the opportunity.
Definitely.
And have no qualms about it, none whatsoever.
Listen, Jay,
you know what I mean?
I don't know if you heard the first part of the program. I talked about what happens globally with African people when you consider that European Caucasian supremacy, racism, and privilege is a global phenomenon, as it has happened, many people who are dark-skinned don't want to be. And so they don't call themselves African. And so even though they're dark-skinned, they identify with the European. They identify with the Yorugupian, you see. And so they are willing to do the bidding of Europeans. They are willing to kill, rob, steal, you know, whatever, to be in good graces of the Europeans. That's why in the world today, when you look at Brazil, when you look at other parts of the world where a good majority of African people are, where are we? What is our status? What is our influence? What is happening? Nothing.
And you know, the thing of the matter is, you take a place like Atlanta. Now, Atlanta is supposed to be the Mecca of Black America at this time, separated from Harlem, which Harlem used to be. But if you take into consideration and into consciousness the type of individuals and the behavior that is promoted in Atlanta, the dominant culture is homosexuality, if the truth be told. You know what I mean? It's like if you look at the direction of us, unfortunately, as the people in this country, we're basically at the bottom now. Everyone else is surpassing us in all facets. And because they have one thing that they are all wishing to do. They're wishing to do what? Push forward their culture.
Right.
What are we doing?
Right.
We're looking to integrate into someone else's culture and become a part of a culture that has done nothing but kill
us.
That's
right.
So how can you move forward as a people when you're now in a position in a society where freaks and degenerates have more power than you? The transsexual. How could a transsexual in a society, in a gay, have more power than the people who built the country? That tells you right there all that needs to be said, that you're powerless as a people because you won't come together as a people and build and develop your culture, that you have now allowed a subculture to overtake your position. You're sick. And nobody wants to deal with it in our community, and nobody wants to be honest and address it.
Because
the only person that I really see that has addressed it at this present time, honestly, to my liking, is Baba Baruti in his writing.
Oh,
and what he's doing with his books.
Yeah.
Other than that, nobody is standing up at this present time for Africanness. It's all about inclusion and being part of this society, which is the Yorugas.
Right.
It's not ours. And it never has been.
And
ours.
It never will be.
I don't want to hear nothing about we built this. We
right.
were forced to build this.
Right.
Let's be clear. That's the distinction that for some reason we can't come to grips with.
But see,
you can't have ownership in something that you were forced to build. It's not yours.
And see, that's the thing. We want to claim this because, you know, we were brought here. And then we were physically, mentally, emotionally, spiritually changed. And because of European culture being imposed upon us the way it was and the things that we did and then made to feel ashamed and hate Africa and hate ourselves and hate our hair, hate our skin. So in that innately, that alienation, that fear is within us, causing us to say, no, I want to be just like Caucasians. I want to, In fact, that's what I said earlier, is that now we have a different mindset about being black. We don't really necessarily want to be white. We definitely don't want to be African.
Because we don't want to be African.
We don't want to be African.
African is not even something that we would even claim.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's like we're so afraid of being African and what African represents, that it drives some of us nuts.
Yeah.
But if you know, it's like, I know your time is short, we gotta go, but if you take into consideration this, whenever you read your history and you deal with how we were captured as slaves in Africa and brought here, and you don't have a true understanding of this Yorugu and your relationship with the Yorugu from the time that we were brought here to the present, then you're mentally sick. Because whenever you study your history and you study the relationship between us and the Yorugu, you can't have nothing but absolutely hatred and disdain for this bastard.
Exactly.
Because of what he has done to our people.
That's right.
And if you don't understand what he's done to our people and how we need to move forward, then you'll never be a sane individual. You'll always see him as your slave master and not him for what he is, your moral enemy, till the day you die. Your job is supposed to rid yourself of your love for that beast. And always remember that he was your oppressor from the time of your conception to the time of your death. And if you don't understand that, then you're absolutely lost. And I don't care how much success you gain in this country. I don't care what job you have or what wealth you're able to build. If it's not based upon the fact that you're going to use it to uplift your people and share with your people, then you're just a wasted Negro. Have a good day, my
All
and
right,
I look
brother.
Forward to Wednesday.
All
Hotep.
Right, good brother. Hotep. Peace to you, my brother. Thanks a lot, Jay. What Jay is saying is very pointed, because the reality is this, is that if we don't release the vice grip that this cracker has put on our minds to make us hate ourselves, hate each other, here we are as African people having the opportunity to connect with our brothers and sisters on the continent to control huge amounts of wealth. But yet we are fractioned and divided. And we've been instilled with a self-hatred and a hatred of Africa and Africans, a hatred of our dark skin. And we're vilified around the globe. Around the globe. We have no, there are people who are darker than us who hate us. Indians. I mean, if we do not come into these realizations, if we do not begin to educate ourselves in this particular matter, not to educate ourselves to go to these schools. I mean, I just saw a piece where some young people were all hooping and hollering because they got into a certain school, an Ivy League school here or there. You know, and I understand that. Yeah, y'all, yeah. I understand that. But what is that young man or that young woman going to do at one of these Ivy League schools or a big university? He or she more than likely, after going through that process, they'll have the mindset of Europeans. They'll have the mindset of everybody else. So I'm saying, dear brothers and sisters, if we do not change the way we look at ourselves and each other, and I believe that we will. I do. Brothers and sisters, we are about to come to the end of another program, and we close this program like we close every program with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the European, the Caucasian, the oppressor, is the minds of the oppressed. And this program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. And not just the M-I-N-D, which is so vitally important, but also the M-I-N-E, to control the mineral wealth that are under the feet of African people. We have an awesome job to do, dear brothers and sisters. And we need to begin right now. Brothers and sisters, Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana. Thank you. Peace, family.